My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, November 28th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival for hours and hours and hours of bonus content, just $3 a month. Do that. It's good stuff behind the paywall. This is episode 545. I have a super special return guest. You know him. You love him. Comedian, writer, black dad, Randolph Terrence from the Three Guys On podcast. Randolph, how the hell are you, man?
I think you should start with black dad first.
Well, I'm not going to re-edit that. So I'm not going to do that again. They know by now that you're a black dad.
In the hierarchy of those three things, comedian, writer, black dad goes first.
Okay. Well, fair enough. I'm not going to do it again. But
unless you want to say black dad for emphasis. You know what I mean? To
hit I would say that sometimes the last description is probably the most important.
Yeah. Rules of three.
Yeah. Or like the host, feature, headliner.
Right.
You know, it depends. It depends.
Maybe we have to say it like that.
We'll let the audience take it for what it is. So how have you been, man? How's it going? How was your Thanksgiving?
You're gonna act like we don't talk to each other daily?
We text, but it's
doing this for the people.
We're doing it.
Hey, for the people, I've been great.
oh my God, breaking the fourth wall, Randy.
Because Chris gets to hear my angst and whatever.
Oh, you get to hear my unbridled anger.
I know.
It's a trade off.
I'm one of the few. I keep telling you, I like angry Chris.
It's the trade-off.
You need to let the people know about Angry Chris. The people don't know about Angry Chris. I know about Angry Chris.
Oh, yeah. One day.
Texting me, hey, man, I need to call you. I'm like, it's about to go down.
some of it's like, am I crazy for thinking this?
And I'm always like, nope.
like when you can finally see the Matrix, you can finally see the zeros and ones off of a lot of this shit. I feel like I could see that stuff, but it's just like how to apply the knowledge that you have to make things better, I guess. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And to then not lose your mind.
Right. Right. Because you're going about to lose your mind up in here.
Yeah, up in here.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. But did you have a good turkey day, though?
Yeah, you know, family's here. They leave today. As a matter of fact, this comes up on Sunday. They're leaving today.
Okay, okay.
And my brother leaves tomorrow.
Nice.
So he's here today, one more day. We might go do something tonight.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Did you get your third shot?
Yeah, I'm long since. Yeah, I got it 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. There was one of my mom's friend's daughters came to Thanksgiving. She lives here. Mm-hmm. So she works for the government, so she's vaccinated. But she's not actually, she's not pro-vaccine mandates, let's say. Mm-hmm. But she's vaccinated, you know what I mean? Because you have to be vaccinated to work for the FAA.
Right.
And me and Tim was going in on, because Tim came.
Okay.
So we were going in. we were going in, you know.
Yeah.
It's the smugness for me that bothers me. I think I've told you that.
Yes.
You
know,
it's their smugness, that same smugness that I saw from people who reviewed this movie we're going to talk about. It's the smugness that bothers me.
Yeah. The Bradley Beal.
Yeah. They think like they have some sort of knowledge that the rest of us don't.
Yeah.
You didn't even know what's in a flu vaccine. I'm like, well, do you know what's in a fucking steak? No.
No, you don't.
The shit that's in a steak or the shit that's in a cutlet of chicken.
Or right.
Shit they force feed in. You have no idea what any of that is. But I bet your ass eats it because it's cheaper.
Yeah. And that junk fire.
Mm-hmm. You ain't got no idea what's going on in that Popeye's kitchen, but that ain't stopped you not once. Nope. Not once has
not
that
not at all. I was there a couple days ago. They messed up my order, but it was still good.
Near not once. What you trust is government regulations.
Yeah.
That's what you're trusting is government regulations. And now all of a sudden you don't trust government regulations when it comes to this thing.
Yeah.
As you sit there with a polio vaccine scar on your arm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fucking stupid. It's stupid. Yeah. It's just stupid. Somehow they know something that we don't know. That shit bothers us. I've told you about other people I've cut off. Like, I'm not fucking with this person anymore. People you've had on your podcast. Like,
I'm done. Well, I've had to cut off people that have been on my podcast. So it's like, it is what it is, man. You can't, it's fascinating how people just choose to not adhere to the facts, where it's free for everybody. It's like even Michael Chase said in his special, where he said, you know, if it was $3,000, I would feel more comfortable. You know, he was saying like, okay, but it's free for everybody. When has this been free?
Yeah.
You know,
when polio vaccine came out and when the smallpox vaccine came out and the flu vaccine is free, you know, vaccines are free.
Yeah, but it's like,
I understand is that we attach value to things because they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just laying there, you know, because if things are more expensive, then things have value to them somehow. Like, I saw some gloves yesterday and J. Crew for $99.
Holy shit.
Not buying a pair of gloves for $99. You know how fast I will leave those gloves someplace?
Yeah.
You leave gloves places all the time. You know what I mean? Right. It's like, that'd be like buying a $99 umbrella. You can leave that bitch somewhere. You know, your little gold plated umbrella, you go leave it somewhere.
I had some Thinsulate gloves from like probably Burlington Coat Factory, and I still miss them.
Yeah.
And they were probably under $20, but yeah, they were like good gloves.
Bucks. Yeah, like $19. Some of the best gloves I've bought have been from the glove guy in New York.
Yeah.
You know, those little shops.
They out there. Every
kind of bullshit you can think of. I'm like, oh, you know what? I need some gloves.
Yep.
Buy some gloves. You know, those black knitted ones.
Mm-hmm.
Them shits keep your hands warm, man.
Yeah, it's cold now. It's starting to get really cold. Like,
yeah, it got cold here yesterday too.
Actually becoming winter in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's a myriad of things that we could talk about.
Really? And to try to a little bit too.
What's that?
You gonna talk Chappelle a little bit too?
We could. This is a disappointing. He had a bad set at his alma mater.
Yeah, were you not supposed to be doing a set?
It was really. I'll say what he said about my man. What's his name? Kramer. Keith. What's his name? Real name?
Keith. Michael Richards.
He's like, he had a bad set. You know,
yeah,
he had a bad set at his alma mater.
He's fighting Kramer. Don't let him break you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that was disappointing. To where he had to say that he's better than them. And
did you read his reply?
I sent you guys a post on Instagram where he was taught. He put a little some pictures up and
the pictures and stuff. That thing. I was like, okay. Yeah, I think I'm done with Chappelle. I've been like this with him for a while now.
Yeah.
And not over the content of the content. I don't particularly care about the content, you know, as a creator. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I'm not gonna fuck it. It's all this other shit he's doing now. Yeah. This shit right here, I'm like, all right, I'm done.
Does that come from a like not having any? Does he have all yes men in his corner, or people just afraid to say something to him?
And he thinks it's because he's always had success.
Yeah,
he's always been successful. Mm-hmm. He's always had fans who have told him how good he was, how great he was, how talented he was. Even when he walked away from his show, it was, we want you to say because we think you're great.
Yeah.
It's not, we don't want you to go somewhere because we think you're whack. We want you to say because we think you're great. And then if you go by now, people have been telling him he's the greatest of all time now. For how long now? People have been saying this about him. People have been saying that about him. I think he's drunk off his own hubris, man.
Yeah.
He believes that anything he does is right, you know.
But he used to be Pilot Boy, though. His pilots would never take off.
Yeah, but that doesn't, you know,
doesn't count. That
they keep giving you pilots means you're great.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I think that's part of it too. I think that's part of it where it's just like, dude, you're one of the greats of all. I think he's one of the goats. It's disappointing when you don't see him taking it further with regards to stepping his game up, you know, mm-hmm. just like recalibrating things and making the high rope tight wire act better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, cause it's like, as somebody who is beneath him as an underling, well, I'm like, well, show me how it's done. And it's like, I see glimmers of it in the last one. I mean, but it's like, as a whole, like that special just to me wasn't, I just felt bad. It just felt disappointing.
To me, it's not about the special anymore. It's about him.
That's true. I mean, but that's a reflection of who he is, and that
who you associate yourself with, who you treat, how you treat people. You're going to tell some kids you better than them? Some kids. Yeah,
that's fucking weird. That's where that was just, when I saw that, I'm like, dude, come on, man.
Yeah.
And I defended him.
I mean, we all did. But I love the kids, though.
It's like, dude, I was like, hey, now, dude, you're in a griot status. Now, what are you going to do with that?
But lose the status? Yeah. that's what he's going to do with it. I mean, these kids don't give a fuck about your act and who the fuck you are and all that shit. They don't care about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They don't care about that. They feel like you're a problem.
Yeah.
So you say you're going to go there and have a dialogue with them, right? You go into the school to have a dialogue. Okay, well, they give you their side of the dialogue and you didn't like it.
Yeah.
Well, then you didn't go there to have a dialogue now, did you? You didn't go there to dialogue with anybody. You went there to harangue them and to tell them that they're wrong. Mm-hmm. But are they wrong? Because they feel a certain way, just because they feel that way don't make them wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but according to you, it does. So,
you know,
I'm going to have a dialogue. No, you're not. You're going to have a one-way conversation, like a stand-up act.
Right. Like a
stand-up act is one way. Well, this is not stand-up.
You know? And he had the camera crew with him.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing. Why are you going to trying to create content? If you really want to go talk to him.
Yeah.
But you got a camera crew with you. They can't bring in phones, you know. So you get to say your side of the edited camera of the edited thing, but they can't put up their side.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So if you're gonna have them not bring in phones and stuff, then you don't bring in a camera, and you have a discussion with these kids. But that's not what you did. That's not what you chose to do. You know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just really disappointing. I was hoping for more from him. And I think there's other comics that are doing it that are being a little more thoughtful about it.
Mm-hmm.
Black comics. I mean, like, you know, Roy and Che.
Right. Right. So, I just watched Roy's special again yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not the hugest of Che fans. I'm not a Che fan. Let me say it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the, as far as stand up, I think he's good.
Yeah. He's a good comic.
I don't think he's as good as Roy.
Well, Roy's like Roy's 20.
Roy's been doing it longer. Yeah.
Yeah. Roy is like 20 plus years in. And I kind of feel like Roy is like, I always say, like, what do you say? Like the five tool,
Five tool player.
He's got it all.
Yeah.
And so like it's almost an unfair comparison but at the same time, you put your stuff out there, it's out there no matter, you know, nerds like us, practitioners will know like, oh, well, this guy's been doing it longer. This guy's right. X, yeah. Y, and Z. Yeah.
Like the way he starts his act.
Yeah.
Everybody's marveling that. I'm like, that's a guy who along the way figured out how to just walk on stage and start with a joke.
I talked to him about that when he was on this podcast here.
I remember. Yeah,
I loved how he did that. Cause that's musician.
What did he say about that?
Oh, it's been a while, but I think it's in the archives, but I told him it was just like a musician.
Yeah.
Because as those type of artists, musicians are the people that I think most, if we were honest, that we want to be like more so than anything.
Absolutely.
And where it's just like you start out with a jam, and then you finish that first jam, and then it's like, hey, what's up, Chicago? You know what I mean? Like, what's up, guys? Now I'm gonna get into it.
I went and saw my man Victor Provost, who plays steel pan. He's a jazz musician. And he plays steel pan.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw him at what was the blues club over in Georgetown? Remember the Blues Alley? Blues Alley. But it's now COVID took it down. Fifty years it's been there. It was Chitlin Circuit. COVID took it down in the space of 9 months. His opening song is just like this aggressive, fast pace, you know, just come on, ladies and gentlemen, Victor Provost, and then boom, they just jump into this song, this aggressive, fast paced song, finish the song, immediately the crowd starts clapping, and then hey everybody, I'm Victor, this is the band, you know, that kind of thing. And I was telling my wife as we were watching, I was like, that's him putting his dick on the table, like, this is who I am, this is what you have come to see. this is who I am right now. I'm going to let you see right now who I am. I remember thinking I'd like to be able to do that as a stand-up comic, but for a stand-up show, you have to build and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if you have a good enough, conceivably, you think all your jokes are good, right?
Right.
But your opener, you should be able to do that, shouldn't you?
You should, in theory. Yeah.
I open with the phrase, I'm Randolph Terrence. I'm going to be up here. I'm going to be up here for X amount of minutes. I'm going to be black. That usually gets a little.
Yeah.
I'm going to be black the whole time.
Yeah.
And then I go into my opening joke, which is about how hard it is to be black in public now.
Yeah.
Just being black in public, you know. But I start like that. Now I'm wondering if I could take away the hey, I'm Randolph Terrence. Do I need to do that? Now watching Roy, I'm like, I don't think I need to do that.
Yeah, because I mean,
you could even told you who I am, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different thing when you're in like special mode as opposed to putting stuff together. But
in a club,
you can always put it into practice though.
Right.
It's like you don't know, there's no wrong way. But I think that aspirational thing about getting close to rock star as you possibly can without losing, you know, your essence is really cool. So yeah, I like how Roy does that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, one of the things like I haven't done a main feed episode in a couple of weeks. And during that we had the little, it's not even a beef if it's not fully cooked, but the thing about between Michael Che and Tim Dillon, I don't like that really got under my skin.
Let me say like this. Dylan wanted it to be a beef.
Yeah, he probably did. Yeah.
But because Che was like, you know, the what's it saying? War Games. The only winning move is not to play.
Yeah.
He didn't play, so he won. I said what I had to say. There's nothing else for me to say other than this.
Yeah.
You know.
Go watch my special.
Right.
Yeah. I just when it got to the point where they were ragging on trying to say that he couldn't read. And when a black person's intelligence gets questioned, that's where I kind of see red. And Che doesn't need me to defend him. Mm-hmm. I'm not friends with him. I'm not close to him, but I always would see him around. I kind of have some type of attachment to him because we started together. I remember doing shit, man. I remember doing bar shows at Manchester Pub. Phoebe Robinson used to host a show. And one time it was Che, Colin Jost, and myself on the show. She used to be a Monday night show and a guerrilla warfare show where she'd give us wings and we'd go scare people and doing stand up.
Right.
And so I kind of have a kinship with him in that way. And we're not best friends or anything, but it just got to me and it got to me more than I expected it to. And
well, if they would do it to him, guess what?
Because they'll do it to me. Oh, yeah, they'll do it to me too.
In a second. You know,
yeah. What I mean? They'll be like, Chris Lambert, who's that?
Yeah, but, you know, you want to do it to him because you don't like the fact that he's successful.
Yeah.
And somehow his success is hindering your success.
Right.
There's so much scoreboard watching out of white guys.
Yeah.
Out of whiteness. There's so much scoreboard. It's all scoreboard. It's like, I'm ahead of them. I'm better than him. That's that Tim Dillon was like, well, you know, I sell out the Beacon. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And what does that mean?
Because you're ultimately, trying to say.
In your mind, it makes you better than him.
Right. Because they're trying to say that, like,
yes,
they know him from being on TV. Well, he got that job from being good at stand-up.
Yeah, being good at stand-up, right.
So.
To them, he got that job because of affirmative action.
Yeah.
Because he's a diversity hire.
Yeah. And that's what, and that's what Chrissy Mayer brought in.
Leslie too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But not the 20 plus years.
What's the girl? What's the girl who's there now?
Ego.
Her too, right?
Yeah.
Affirmative hire, right? So is Chris Rock, right?
Yeah.
They're diversity hires. They're all diversity hires.
Yeah.
You know? All the way back to The Godfather on Saturday Night Live. Who's the Godfather black person who was on
Marvel? Garrett Morris,
all the way back to him. Diversity hires, right? Yeah. Not like Garrett wasn't talented, who could have been an opera singer. No,
yeah,
he was just there because they needed a black guy. Diversity hires, all diversity hires.
But when they hire us, we got to be the best.
Exactly,
dude. Do you know how
you have to have how many years under your belt of work?
To do the walk-on part that I do now on Broadway,
right.
I had to.
Right.
God damn, man! Come on. Right.
I know.
That's why it just makes me so angry. And you know, I was having this conversation. Well, we you and I talked about it. I saw this play, "Trouble in Mind," is a satire about black people working on Broadway. And I was talking about it with another guy who happened to be white. He just didn't, it didn't hit him in the same way it hit me. And it was certain parts of it he couldn't understand or he thought was a little too much. I was like, well, that's satire, bro.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I don't know. Because those same people, I remember when I first started stand up, it was these same people that had power over people like me and Phoebe and Che or had their time in would exclude Phoebe from certain shows or shows that you couldn't get on and shows that we were fighting to get on. And now that she got some success and passed them when she was starting to blow up, those same people would be like, oh, I can't have the same opportunities as Phoebe. I'm like, no, you kept her out. So right. she made her own way. You right. know, so it's just kind of like I never get over stuff like that. That stuff just, I just see red when I
don't think you
that.
Should.
Yeah.
I think people will tell you that just get successful and then you don't have to think about it anymore. I don't believe that.
Right.
Why would you not think about it anymore? Why would it not be? It's imprinted on you. It's not going anywhere. There's nothing wrong with that. It's how you handle it and how you process it. I'm a big one in now, thanks to therapy, Chris. Mm. I'm a big one now in expression of emotion, and they don't let Black people express emotion.
Yeah,
they're not allowed to. Why? My emotions are just as valid as anybody else's emotions.
Right.
You know, I'm supposed to just keep squashing it in all the time. Fuck that. You know, so I got to listen to all of to whiteness just constantly attack Blackness mm-hmm. in weird little anti-Black ways. Well, I sell more tickets than he does. He can't even read the teleprompter. Really? He can't read the teleprompter? You think they hired a guy who can't read? That's what you think?
The head writer on a comedy institution.
Yeah, the guy who was a head writer. He can't read. That's what you believe. Yeah.
When I had Darren Patterson on, and I appreciate his podcast because he does the SNL nerds and they talk about, you know, the show and they recap it. They're fans of the show. And I was talking to him about it. All those motherfuckers want to be on that show. They want to be affiliated with it.
They do.
It's a comedy institution. And to try and some when you try to create comedy within 5 days, 5 or 6 days, it doesn't all work. But for the most part, some of the shit works, some of it doesn't. But overall, it's a entertaining time.
Right. But
they want to do that shit.
Of course they do. And you know what? They're not good enough. They're not good enough.
Yeah,
that's all that means. And therein is the bothersome part. Why does that guy get to do it? I'm better than him.
Yeah.
Well, you're not. You may be. But in this instance, you're not. Someone don't think you are.
Right.
Or you didn't take the necessary steps to get yourself on. You didn't do what was necessary. Well, you don't know the right people. You don't know the right people because you hang with shitty other people.
Yeah.
You know, you don't hang with people who are decent and know and are decent looking to help each other. You don't hang with people like that.
Yeah.
You know? For you, it's about scoreboard. If you want to build up your fan base, you want to build up a fan base that's willing to buy tickets for you. That's fine. But don't hold that out like that's the end all be all of success, because it's not.
Yeah. You know, because if you still feel there's still emptiness that they feel if they're going to attack for that, for those reasons, and give you those reasons for saying that.
And it always swirls around anti-Blackness. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
No, it always swirls around anti-Blackness. Isn't that odd?
Because I had to hold myself back last weekend in the dressing room where somebody asked a dumbass question.
Right.
To a black dude.
Right.
And I almost saw red.
Yeah.
Why are you asking him this?
Right.
Did you ask the other white guys in the other room about that shit? No, you didn't.
Because there has to be an angle. There has to be a reason why.
Yeah.
There always has to be a reason.
This whole why not me?
Yeah, why exactly. Not me? And scoreboard. And by the way, if it's not me, well, I sell more tickets than this person does. It should be me because I'm better than him. And besides, they can't even read. Really?
And I don't think that's true. I don't even think the more tickets thing is true.
I don't believe that either. I don't believe that. I don't believe that either. Particularly in this, the way things work now.
Yeah.
That you can build, you can just build your own fan base and stuff like that. But that doesn't give you broad-based appeal. That just means you've built your fan base.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I'm fine with.
Yeah.
He's talking about being a boutique act. I'm fine with being a boutique act, and I'm fine with selling. And I have my fans. I have Three Guys On fans, Mundane Festival fans, you know, the Black Guy with Tips fan. I'm fine with having my own fan base and stuff like that, but I'm not trying to lord my fan base over you.
No, that's a different thing. And they were somewhere Godfrey was kind of talking about it, and he's like, I ain't saying shit. I was like, I mean, I don't have anything. I think he's got probably got more at stake. I don't have anything to lose. I just know. I just think that angle of just it just always seems to be the black guy.
Right.
The black person always seems to be getting shit on when it comes to this stuff. And it's like, I mean, people this was like, and I seen shit like this coming. This was like 7 years ago where people started getting those rumblings about, hey, these white dudes are saying X on this podcast. They're saying Y on this podcast. And I would get these texts from other black comedians saying, what's going on with this? I was like, well, and it's something that I stopped listening to. This podcast that I don't listen to anymore, where it's like, oh, I could just listen to my friends who are going to challenge the way that I think and who are going to make me see things differently. And I don't need that. There's plenty of other shows that I can listen to where I don't need that stuff. Can I still respect some of these people's work? Of course I can. But when it comes to this other shit, I don't need that. I don't need the what do you call it? The equivocation to appease both sides. I don't need that.
And it's
just like, no. I guess our friend Howard, you know, I guess I'm a full dissident now.
I mean, if you have any kind of consciousness as a black person, how does Baldwin say it, to be black and have any type of consciousness, to be in a state of rage all the time.
Yeah.
So at some point you kind of start to go full dissident.
Yeah.
Or you make a conscious choice to just not give a fuck. And there are a lot of people like that. Just, I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to concentrate on what I'm doing and moving along and getting along. I can't do that.
So, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Cause I try to be, I don't know. I think as a black man, cause that's all I ever been. And it's not to slight anything about black women. I'm sure they have their thoughts about it too, being black women. There's a constant state of awareness that you have to have, or that this society, and I guess it's just embedded in your DNA that you just have to be aware of, like, oh, I can't say that. I can't say that because I'll just come, oh, he's just an angry black guy. Yeah. Or he's just this. And it's just like, okay, so this is some bullshit. So I'm going to just shut down. Like even at work, where you just like, if I react to this, they're going to say I'm angry and they're going to do X, Y, and Z. And it's just like, yeah.
So I've tried to start interrogating that is being angry. So, well, he's just an angry black guy. Okay. Do I have reason to be angry? Do I have reason to be angry? If I have reason to be angry, then why am I not angry? So I have reason to be angry. My anger is valid and justified, but I don't get to express it. So why don't I get to express it? Well, the reason why I don't get to express it is because it makes you uncomfortable.
Right.
But I'm uncomfortable. That's why I'm angry.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you want is for me to hide my anger so that you can be comfortable. Are you out of your fucking mind? are you fucking crazy?
Yeah.
Why in the fuck would I do that? We do it, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
We do it all the time. We do it because if we don't, we can get fired.
Right.
We can get promoted. We can get X'd out of projects.
Yeah.
We get kept out of projects. We're on a project, now we're off a project. Just because I said the wrong thing that upsets you. Walter Mosley was part of a Star Trek writing room. Walter Mosley.
Right.
One of the best writers out there, you know, wrote the Dublin Blue Dress series, blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows who Walter Mosley is.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the writer's room. He's relaying a story about a police officer calling him nigger on the street, saying, you can't have your nigger ass here. If I see a nigger in this neighborhood, I do this. If I see an Italian, Irish person in this neighborhood, I do this. You know, he tells this story and then somebody runs back to HR saying that they're not comfortable with him saying nigger. I'm like, so I can't, yeah. I'm telling you a story. I'm the black guy telling you the story, and I can't do that?
Yeah.
Fuck out of here. Why can't I do that?
Right.
Know? Because it makes you uncomfortable, you know? Yeah. And he's the only black guy in the room.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he quit.
Yeah.
Now, Walter has enough money and success and fame that he's just like, I don't fucking need these. You brought me here. I don't need this. So I'm the fuck out of here. Good luck. You know?
Yeah.
Shit like that.
Yeah. It's a thing that we got to navigate all the time. All the time.
Well, look at what happened to Will Smith. And yeah. Venus and Serena. I mean, this is like become normal shit now.
Yeah. This one, it just seems like every time black people do something, it's critiqued different. It just seems like it's critiqued differently. And then I think we do it to ourselves. I don't think it's just white people. But in this case, you have with King Richard, you have, you know, this movie that was approved by Venus and Serena, mm-hmm. who gave their names, who gave their blessing, their executive producers on it. I think they're EPs on it, but I know they. Oh, OK. I'll pause.
Yes,
we're back. Hold up.
Trying to hold back the magic. Jesus.
He had a black dad moment. It's all good. I just think with this movie, when you have Venus and Serena's approval about their dad, then I think it should be okay. Now, whether you like the movie or not, that's, you know, everybody can have their opinion whether they like it or not. But I think, you know, I just don't get it.
I'm going to interrogate your dislikes about it. If you dislike something, I'm definitely going to interrogate that. You don't get to tell these women what their portrayal is supposed to be, how they want something to portray. You don't get to do that.
Right.
To support what your agendas are. That's what this is all about. It's agendas. Yeah. And then what really makes me mad is particularly these warrant people saying that, well, I'm just doing this because these two talented black women. I'm like, you don't give a fuck about blackness. You don't give a fuck about black women. You're just using that to push your agenda, whatever your agenda may be.
Right.
You know?
And I sent you a post that somebody made about like saying about how he had these kids that he didn't.
Want to say his name?
No. Let's not do that. No, we ain't gonna do that.
Sure.
Nope. We're not gonna do that.
Well, he would call himself an ally though.
I don't think he is, but like
I'm saying he would call himself that.
Sure.
And I'd be like, well, you're not.
Well, just to bring up the stuff that. I get there's not even really skeletons, but just to say that he had other kids outside of the ones that was in his house when they was coming up.
Again, it's a well-known thing. Isn't it?
And like, if you don't get that, like the Ingenue Ellis's one moment to really get it in that kitchen scene, like that's there. So it's in like, this is not a perfect dude, but it was laid bare in the film. So it's like, okay, you had to say that. But then I guess when the Steve Jobs movie came out, when he didn't care about his kid, I said some shit. I said shit about that on stage. But
so the question I would ask this person is, where did that come from? Why did you feel the need to say that?
To try to take it down a peg.
Right. Why do you? Okay. Then let's interrogate that. Why do you feel the need to take this particular man down and this particular movie down? You know, most times we start asking those questions, most people, they refuse to look inside themselves and see and take a look and ask themselves these questions. It seems very easy to go after Richard Williams.
Yeah.
Isn't it odd how easy it is to go after him?
Yeah.
Because that's all you've seen is people just attacking Richard Williams, And it's somehow Richard Williams being elevated is taking away from Venus and Serena. Yeah. As if you gave a fuck about Venus and Serena. You never gave a fuck about them.
Right.
You never gave a fuck about them. Other than to make fun of their looks, yep. to call them angry women, to say they're really not that talented. To you, all this shit you think I've forgotten, you almost have forgot that you... all the shit you've been saying about him all these years, and now all of a sudden it's not. Get the fuck out of here, man. Stop yeah. with the bullshit. To call her unattractive, to call Serena unattractive, to say that she looks like an ape, to say Venus is unattractive, when yeah. all they've done is be boring ass women who win tennis matches.
Yeah,
that's all they've ever done in life, is be mm-hmm. boring ass women who win tennis matches and succeed. You have yeah. never heard of them being into shit. You never heard nothing except that one time with Venus. And even that was proven to not be anything having to do with her.
What you time know? With Venus?
She was in that car accident. Somebody died behind that.
Yeah. I think one other thing is there people are getting on how Will Smith, his accent, his dialect, his.
You want to say the people who are getting on him about it?
No, because it's not just one person, but I've noticed that people are saying that, and that's where he's from. He's yeah. from Louisiana. So yeah. Will Smith.
It's because you've never heard Will Smith talk like that.
Yeah.
So therefore it must be fake. And in the meantime, I was watching something just the other day and Hank Aaron was talking and he mm-hmm. had that same accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. That same accent. Cause Hank Aaron is from that same place.
Yeah. Yeah. She's from Alabama.
Yeah.
That just region.
Just that region of the South.
Yeah, because I think people think that, like I told you a week ago, maybe I was doing this play about these people that have been exonerated for being on death row. Mm-hmm. And they were from the South. And then one character was from Florida. I think I forget where my character was from. We were all from the South and we had a dialect coach and was trying to teach us. And then one of the black guys was like, I don't know why we got to talk like this. Cause it's, you know, it just makes him sound dumb. And I was like, that's where he's from.
Yeah.
That's where the guy is from. So you're giving these people dignity and honor
right.
by portraying them the way that they talk.
Right.
And it's not, I don't know if that's like an educational thing where it's like, you think that just because you're from a certain region that you're dumb. And it's easy to go into that accent, like, God, you know, fucking, you know, whatever it is, whatever I'm from, where you're from. And I don't know. I think that's like a stigma that black people have.
Yeah. Well, because it makes it sound stupid.
I get you, and I guess maybe because
Richard Williams was far from stupid.
No, I guess because you're from the South. I summered in North Carolina. my people are from North Carolina and Virginia. Right. And when I go home, that shit ain't nothing new to me. So it's not like, oh my, I was never like, oh my God. I was like, I would get there. I was like, we going to the flea market.
Yeah.
Yo, like I want some football cards.
Yeah, people who live in New York City act like other motherfuckers ain't got no accent.
Yeah, they act like nobody else exists.
You know, and they have the dialect like they're like, oh, that guy sounds so fuck stupid, B.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This fucking guy.
Come on, son.
Yeah, it's just a different dialect. Yeah, different dialect, different region, and you want to get into it. You want it as an actor.
You think Will didn't work on that?
Yeah, I think somebody, he definitely had a coach.
Right.
Even Bomani Jones who doesn't even talk about movies that much. He was saying on his show where he's like, and Bo knows because he's been in those areas.
Right.
He's a Texas guy, but he was saying like
Texas, Atlanta.
Yeah. He sound just like those people.
Right. Right.
I thought it was a good movie. The movie wouldn't have worked for me if they didn't have that interview scene that you played on Three Guys
yeah,
On.
Yeah, yeah, you got to have that.
And I kind of was mad that I saw an interview, like Will Smith was doing like a Tonight Show or something, and they played that scene, I kind of wish I would have just seen it in the movie.
Seen that scene, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, ah, but I was like, okay, yeah, I wonder
why they made the choice to set it outside rather than set the scene up shot for shot. I wonder why they made that choice.
I don't know. But it still worked. I felt like
well, the words were shot for shot.
Yeah.
I saw a thing where they put it side by side and the words are.
Oh, you saw a thing where they
dialogue
did?
The dialogue is exactly the same.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I really love the movie. I mean, it got me. I welled up quite a few times.
Yeah.
Like, every fucking speech. Like, God damn it.
I remember feeling really mad when I forgot that girl iced her in the tournament. She was crushing her.
Yeah.
Number one in the world. She was crushing that girl, and that girl iced her in the tournament.
Yeah. That was fucked up.
That's that. But again, okay, so you're talking about the movies about Richard Williams. That scene is all about Venus.
Yeah.
Them and then coming outside and all the people waiting to get autographs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's where the handoff begins.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That the handoff begins at that moment from. It's no longer about Richard Williams, and now it's going to start to be about Venus and Serena. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's where the transition. If you're going to make a movie about Venus and Serena, that's where the transition begins.
Right
there, like now, the world knows about the Williams sisters. They know about Venus, and they're very soon going to know about Serena.
Right, and they had that scene with him and Serena. That another scene where I was like, God damn, like. When he gave her that speech, say you next.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I do not know what Denzel's gonna do in Macbeth.
We'll do Macbeth, man.
But
he's gonna go in and he's gonna choose some scenery. It's Denzel doing Macbeth. He's going to choose some scenery. You know what he's gonna do.
I'm just kind of nervous because it's like I love them both.
Yeah,
but Will Smith's like one of my, you know, other than my parents, obviously. Yeah.
Macbeth is the kind of role that is for Denzel to win an Oscar. It's a elder statesman of acting role.
Yeah.
First of all, you got to have a certain level of gravitas to even be considered.
Yeah.
To play Macbeth.
Right.
level of gravitas, a certain level of manness, all kinds of shit goes into that. And Denzel gets all that. So he's going to go in there and he's going to chew the shit out of some scenery. And
oh, man.
It is what it is, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like I said this so many times on the show where it's like you got, I think I was telling Veronica this, Veronica P, Dr. Veronica P, we were telling her like, with Chad in Ma Rainey, it's like, okay, that monologue's great. He crushed it. He got it. But then I saw the father with Anthony Hopkins. I was like, ooh, yeah. It's like he's got another, Anthony Hopkins has another gear. And it's like, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm rooting for Chad, but I wouldn't be surprised if Anthony Hopkins won. And it's like Black Twitter hasn't seen the father. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
I didn't see it. I'm not going to see it.
Yeah. So it's like,
I'd take your word for it.
Yeah.
You say he did it, then he did it.
Yeah. That shit was amazing. Yeah. But with this one, cause it's like with Denzel where he should have won in 2015.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, Denzel doing August Wilson. All right. I'm in. And it was like, yeah, I know this movie's going to be good, but then it's like, oh, Denzel's got another gear. That we didn't know about. So yeah. I'm nervously excited to see Macbeth, but then I'm just rooting for Will Smith.
Well, the thing about Will Smith and that other gear is you would think that playing Richard Williams shows that he has another gear, right? You would think that.
Yeah.
After Earth is what showed it.
Dude, I mean, that film was like...
You and I were like the only ones.
Rod, too.
It's not a good movie, but it is a good movie.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie, but it is a good movie.
I went with JL to see that movie, man.
It's not a good movie, but it is a good movie.
Yeah.
I would even argue to say it's a good movie. Control. Speaking of accents, there's another accent.
You know? They were doing like a weird thing.
Like accent that they put together, supposed to be an amalgamation of all these human accents.
Katai.
Listen to me, Katai. Fear is something that can be controlled. I was like, God damn.
And then he did. And
the scene where he was, where Katai is yelling at him.
Yeah.
And they jumps off the cliff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like, you got a suit that can fly. You're just now pulling this out.
I bought that shit on Blu-ray. I got it off of eBay. That's a great movie.
That's why I said this shit is stupid. You got a suit that can fly. You're just now.
he had just happened to be at the top of that mountain or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd ever been up that high. But I think Will Smith's a great actor. I really liked, Pursuit of Happiness was really stripped down for him. And then the movie that everybody hated, that Christmas movie that he did.
Oh, that shit is stupid.
But he was so good.
Five people, five something or other, seven, nine. I don't know. Some sort of number, I think. I don't know.
His thing, he always be trying to be Jesus in these movies.
Yeah.
And the more sacrificing himself. And the more I get into his book, I understand why he's like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I get it. The movie he did, because I even bought that shit. That shit, Collateral Beauty in 2016. Yeah. And I was like,
that was a stupid one.
I was watching that movie and I went to the theater to see it. And I was just like, that shit made me cry. He was so good. He's so good in it. It don't matter if the movie's bad. He's gonna be good in that bitch.
Right.
So like that dude's one of my heroes. And it was just good to see because you know he did an accent in Ali. He was great in that.
Yeah, he was great in that. Movie not that good, which I thought would be him and Jamie.
Yeah,
great in it. You know.
Yeah, it's just like Michael Mann had. We were talking about him like last night in the dressing room, how, you know, he just kind of has these big sprawling pieces that are kind of like capturing behavior. And there's the narrative is there, but it's really more about the like acting and the capturing this human behavior in like these given circumstances that makes it pretty interesting. Like I think Collateral with Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise, that is my favorite movie of his.
Right.
I thought King Richard was really good. It does what a movie's supposed to do,
right?
Especially a sports film. It's going to inspire you. And, you know, I have to say this, you know, I thought that, you know, they showed him being a security guard, showing him, you know, I thought he was, and I was right, that he was going to shoot one of those gang members.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is about to be like some, what's my man, Harry Brown shit. Old guy going to get at.
That's what I thought. Well, even when he was like, okay, I'm going to go. I assumed he was going to go shoot that gang guy.
Yeah.
Gang. I was like, he's going to shoot the shit out. I was like, he's going to shoot the shit out this motherfucker.
Yeah.
The motherfucker gets hit, clipped in the drive-by.
Yeah.
You know.
I was glad that they showed that to show him like, I'm not gonna lay down for this shit. Like you might have got and it's just the whole thing. Like I was talking to my dad about it, where he's like, Yeah. We were talking about the world shit on me, or whatever it is, the world treated me this way, but they're not going to treat y'all like this.
Uh-huh.
The part where he talked about like getting jumped and his father running away, and he's like, I'm not going to do that to y'all. And so
there was the scene where he comes home and his daughter says, well, dad got beat up again.
Mm-hmm.
It's that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is a regular occurrence.
Right.
For this dude, you know?
Yeah.
And the movie is just a beautiful telling of Black fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothers people. And again, they don't want to interrogate themselves and ask themselves, why does that bother you? Because that destroys the narratives that all of society has built up around Black fathers.
Yeah. Yeah, stuff like that makes me angry because we let so much shit get by.
Which is what, when that person who was talking, that tweet about him having other children.
Yeah.
He's trying to break down Black fatherhood.
Yeah.
He'll say he's not. He'll say, oh, it's just about Richard Williams. Like, well, is it? Yeah. Because this movie is not just about Richard Williams.
Right.
Neither was After Earth. This movie is about Black fatherhood, Black family. And that bothers Black people. Speaking of another podcast we were listening to, that bothers Black people that Will and Jada want to show Black parenthood and Black parenthood in a positive light. That bothers them. Well, you're doing that, but you're not telling the truth about people. I'm like, no, I'm showing you all sides of somebody.
Yeah. Because if you didn't have, like, I think for in the movie's defense, I'm not really defending it, but that moment in the kitchen with him and Anjanue Ellis was like, yeah, this is where shit's hitting the fan.
Right.
And it ain't all good.
Right.
And she was like, I sacrificed too. Cause the movie's called King Richard.
Right.
And like I had my man, Derek Sanders on, who was one of my theater directors. He used to say, and this is where I got it from, all it takes, and I think he might have got it from, he said he may have gotten it from August Wilson, but all it takes is that one moment for you to get that look and be like, okay, that's an Oscar nominated.
Right.
This actor should get nominated. Anjanue Ellis, that scene, there you go.
It's the hug at the end.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's the scene where she goes and she confronts the other mother across the street.
That too, but I'm talking
that,
about
that scene to me set the stage for what a formidable woman she was.
Yes. Like this, yeah. You know,
it's like, okay, let me go over here. And then just the simple phrase of, I haven't come over here since you're done. That's on me.
Right.
Don't make me have to come over here again.
Yeah.
There's no arguing with that statement. Don't make me have to come over here again.
Right. But she had to have that moment. She had to have that moment in that kitchen.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't have been real.
Like,
because you know they've had that moment. But she was giving you hints of that. This formidable woman.
Yeah.
She told in that scene when she said about the scene of, you know, you didn't consult me about this, about them not playing. Don't have me out here looking stupid again. You know,
that was like just enough. It like a movie like this. Cause it's a balance between like, cause what is this movie PG-13? I think it's PG-13.
It's PG-13. Yeah.
And it's like, that was just enough grit to make this palatable for a general audience.
Right.
And I even thought like a movie, like Remember the Titans, like when it comes with like a sports inspirational sports movie, that movie was 20 years ago. And the way that they portrayed the racism was like immaculate. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, even though it's not like, I don't know. Like it's just like they handle it very deftly. And I think I believe Bomani Jones was talking about, they were trying to do things to sanitize it, to make it. I agree with that to a certain degree, but I think at the same time,
oh, they didn't give you all the racism.
They didn't give you
the parents yelling at them.
How is he getting in these rooms?
You know, they didn't give you that.
Yeah, because black dude going into a country club with these black girls with.
Right. The people at the tournament talking shit about this black girl, the only black girl there. Them coming as a family. People at the tournaments talking shit about which you know they did, talking shit about this black family being at these tournaments.
Yeah.
You know they were talking shit about them.
It was just enough. And if you really want to get into it, you just watch a documentary, or maybe they'll do something like that. But for the general, because this is something that might get taught in school, you might see
not anymore this, because critical race theory. So it's
that's true. Well, I mean, some teachers might play this shit.
By the way, we know white comedians who are parroting that same bullshit line about critical race theory making white kids feel bad about themselves.
White comedians.
Yes. Yeah, they're out there. They're parroting those same lines. And black people, other black comedians are still cool with them.
You got to tell me off mic who that is.
You fuck with somebody like that, you can't then turn around and tell me that you are you are an anti-racist or you are pro or pro black person. If you're fucking with people who are saying shit like that, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear that, black or white. I don't want to hear that you telling me how you're anti-racist. Or you're
this is my first time hearing that. I didn't know that.
I've been paying attention, listening to what people have been saying. You know.
Yeah, and really, it's in because that's a critical race theory is taught in law school.
Yeah, it's a law. It's a theory.
Because Rod put me onto Southlake, that podcast series.
I know the story. I haven't watched the podcast because I know the story. I'm from Texas. I know the story.
It's very good. I can't recommend it enough.
I was trying to explain that to this white woman and she didn't understand me. This white woman who works for the Justice Department here, who our kids play soccer together.
Okay.
You see Southlake? And I was like, nah, I don't have any desire to watch it. I'm from there. I know that story.
Who's the woman that created it? What's her name?
I don't even know her name.
Oh, shit. I gotta look it up.
I know all there's a lot of towns in Texas that are just like that. She said, but there was black people living there. I said, yes. And they got their nigga wake up call, didn't they? I said, have you ever heard of a comic named Paul Mooney?
Gloria Lanson.
He has a phrase called a nigga wake up call. And those people moved to that town and they got it because they thought that living in this town, they would be above it. No, you're not.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And it's like that stuff it's stuff that you do in law school. Right. But I think that was the dog whistle. That was like the new dog whistle to.
Not to get off the subject of Richard Williams, but they said that was what they were going to do. They said it, you know, they said we're going to use this to upset white people. And it works, you know, and then for white people to say. Not even, let's not say whiteness, let's say the majority, because there's Latino people who feel the same way. It's it's going to make white kids feel. Condoleezza Rice went on fucking The View and said it.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, the Latino.
Black children by making white people feel, but who's making white children feel bad?
Yeah, nobody.
What a stupid thing to say. You know, what a stupid thing to say.
That is that crossover into whiteness when you talk about the Latino people, because that's on the podcast too. It's very you could just
tell people all the time. Look, the first time I was called nigger to my face, I was 10 years old, and there was a Mexican kid who did it.
He
came back from Germany. That's the first time I was called nigger to my face, and it stung just as much as when the next how many hundreds of white people who did it to me later on down the road did the same thing, and I was 10 years old. Okay, so we came back from Germany. So I know I don't have any, and there's no thing of, well, they're Mexican. And I'm like, okay, all right. Are they moving in anti-blackness?
No, they're not.
No. Yes, they do. That's what I mean. I'm sorry.
Are they moving? They're racist.
They are anti-black.
They're anti-black. Yes.
Which is what it is that they're anti-black. You know, you're moving with anti-blackness. You're not pro-black.
Yeah.
Because somehow you feel like you're superior to those mayates. They're just mayates anyway, so that's what they call us.
I think that's what makes me. I think the name of this episode should be "Seeing Red."
Mayates, for those who don't know what the word is, are little black bugs that live in cow shit.
Yeah,
that's what Mexicans choose to call us. Mexicans specifically. You know,
on a lighter note, but we liked King Richard, and it's
it's a great expression of black fatherhood.
Yeah,
and I'm about expressions of black fatherhood. I thought Will was great in the role.
Yeah.
He put the character on really well. He made me see past just Will Smith.
Yeah,
Majnun Ellis was great, obviously. Of course the kids were good. I don't hear, but but the kids, I'm like, again, you're trying to take, whenever somebody says stuff like that, I'm like, you're just trying to take the focus off of Will and place it. It should have been more about the kids. I'm
like nobody else has had an Oscar vehicle. When Leo does it, you know, and I love Leo. Nobody says anything.
Yeah. No one's ever disputing anywhere about it when we say that.
Sanaa Sidney as Venus. And Demi Singleton as Serena.
Tell you what, man, the girl who played the grown-up Tunde, the older sister who went away to college and then reappeared at the first match. The first match she was at, I was like, "Oh my god, who's that?"
Is it Michaela Lachey? Like, who's Bartholomew? That? Older Tunde. She was that's why that thug was trying to get at her. Tunde. It's a good movie. I really, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if you had niggas crying in the trailer, I mean,
yeah.
And like, it's at least three or four scenes where I got emotional. It did its job, you know.
Yeah, but an elder statesman's coming. He's coming in the Macbeth costume. I don't know.
It's like I don't know. I'm kind of nervous because I'm rooting for Will.
I don't know what to tell you.
I'm just nervous. I'm nervous about that. Like, cause it, you know, they were talking about colorism. Like, he didn't look like Rick. It's like, god damn it, man.
Will Smith is black. Stop.
The movie doesn't get made.
Will Smith is black. Stop it. They act like El DeBarge was out there in the world. It's not El DeBarge.
And who knows?
Or Mario Van Peebles. It's fucking like, Will Smith.
And who knows better than Venus and Serena if he did a good job? You know what I'm saying? Because he even said he was nervous about them watching it, you know?
I would be too.
I would be too. Yeah. So I just think it angers me sometimes when we as a people are critical.
We're not immune to it.
We're not immune to it. And I don't think we're at that place where it's like, we're still not at that place yet where we can critique these black films and these black projects. I think we're getting there, but we can't do it in public. And then at the same time, you know, I try to uplift and amplify more than I do with these, more than I do critique, you know, really criticize. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, my podcast is a small but mighty one, but I try to, if I don't like something, I'll just probably not say
anything. There's nothing wrong with critiquing.
No, it's nothing wrong with it
at all. But I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to interrogate your critique.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that either.
Right.
I don't have to just accept whatever your critique is.
Yeah. Because I noticed that about, we'll talk about it. When we talked about, I'm trying not to be off mic Chris.
Yeah.
It's just like,
off mic Chris is the best mic Chris, y'all. Y'all don't know.
It's just like, really? Okay. That's crazy. It's like, that's what you saw.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what you thought. You thought that was too much. You thought that blackness was too much.
Okay. Right. You know, so I can critique your critique.
Yeah.
You're not immune. Why are you immune?
Right. Right.
You know, why can't I question what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, we'll close with this. How is writing for open mic and in the past few years writing for TV? How has that influenced your comedy? Has it helped it or?
Yes, it has helped it. I believe that it's definitely helped me structure wise. They both help each other structure wise. I don't write a ton of comedy now on the show because I write more on the commentary side, but even that helps me. A guy that I really look to now is Michael Harriet.
Okay.
Formerly of The Root, now onto other things.
He works with
getting on Amanda Ruffin's show. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I kind of look to him to ways to shape commentary and to tack humor on it. But his writing is so black, I can't get away with that on what I do. But I try. I put it in. But they don't really challenge me too much on the things that I write.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's helped. It's definitely helped. It's also definitely freed my mind up. I don't write for myself as much as I should, because I write every day. From work, I don't write for myself as much as I should. Let's say it like that. I need to take a screenwriting course, something like that, so I can work on developing a screenplay or
work on developing scripts and stuff like that. I keep saying that, you know.
I think being away from comedy really is helping me, like, think about things more.
Yeah.
And really, like, to come back at it with more vigor and.
Well, this year off, because of the pandemic and quarantine, really gave me a lot to think about stand-up wise.
Yeah.
You know. Lucky that whole time I was able to keep writing and keep working, but it's more in the vein of I'd like to be able to write something along the lines of what Kenya's doing, Kenya Barris has done, like Michael Harriet has done, or, you know, a good show or a good square, even like a Ted Lasso, writing on that is so good.
Yeah.
Something along those lines, like that haircut scene in Ted Lasso.
Right.
I'd like to be able to write something like that. So I need to learn how.
You know. Perhaps you will, Randolph.
Perhaps I will. Perhaps.
Well, plug.
Not perhaps, mayhaps. In the old English.
Okay. All right. In mayhaps, old English style.
Mayhaps.
Well, plug some stuff, man. Plug Three Guys On.
Three Guys On podcast, which is on. It's on everywhere you listen to podcasts and Patreon. We do a Patreon episode on Mondays, and we do an open to the public on Thursdays. Go to just search the word Three Guys On. It's everywhere you want it. It's everywhere you get your podcasts. You can check out Open Mic with Reese Waters at the WSA9. If you're in the DMV, it's on Channel 9 at 7 p.m., which is CBS affiliate. If you're not in the DMV, you can go to WSA9 website and you can click it on right there. You can also get at me on Twitter. I'm at Real Talk For You on Twitter and Randolph Terrence on Instagram.
Randolph, this was great, man.
Always great talking to you, man.
Thanks so much for doing it. Thanks everybody for listening. And I will talk to you.
Well, I need to let the people hear me say, love you, boy. Thank you for letting me do this.
Oh, love you too, man. Take it easy, everybody.